And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. Today on the program, we'll be talking with Peter Metcalf from the Public Market, along with a couple of vendors he has brought in tow. We're going to get an update on all things Eagle Crest, and Aaron Walker-Tolles, Executive Director of Hospice and Home Care of Juno, will be here to highlight the this year's Light Up a Life event. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more up next on a Juno Afternoon. And this program will be repeated at 4 o'clock on KRNN and available online on demand at ktoo.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Many First Nations leaders are urging governments, especially in Western Canada, to develop long-term plans to deal with the high numbers of Native children in care. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Alberta's Justice Minister says she's reviewing the issue and could have new guidelines by the spring.
Alberta's Justice Minister, Kathleen Ganley, says consultations are already underway with First Nations and she would like to see changes to reduce the number of Aboriginal children in care. Earlier this year, statistics suggested that 69% of the children under care across Alberta were from First Nations communities. Ganley says there is definitely an overrepresentation, and in her talks with Native leaders, she's been discussing alternative solutions. The hope, of course, is to keep children in their homes as often as possible. Charles Weaselhead is the Grand Chief of a group of Alberta First Nations called Treaty 7.
That is the outcome that we want to do, you know. But having that many numbers and taking a look at our situation on reserve in regards to capacity, number one, financial support, and number two, it begins to break down the success factor, you know, when we begin to do that, you know. So we need to develop a long-term plan.
Weaselhead says finding the solutions will take time. He says his people have been calling on governments for years to try to bring the issue up for discussion. Ganley says she expects recommendations from the talks to be submitted by February. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The late Native rights advocate Billy Frank Jr. was honored by the White House Tuesday. He was posthumously awarded the Medal of Freedom. President Obama.
And finally, we celebrate those who've challenged us to live up to our values. Billy Frank Jr. liked to say, I wasn't a policy guy. I was a getting arrested guy. And that's true. Billy was arrested more than 50 times in his fight to protect tribal fishing rights and save the salmon that had fed his family for generations. He was spat on, shot at, chased, and clubbed and cast as an outlaw, but Billy kept fighting because he knew he was right. And in 1974, a federal judge agreed, honoring the promises made to Northwest tribes more than a century before. Billy went on to become a national voice for Indian country and a warrior for the natural world.
17 recipients were presented the nation's highest civilian honor during a ceremony at the White House. The Interior Department this week announced it's prepared to cancel a long-suspended oil and gas lease in the Badger 2 Medicine area near Glacier National Park. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates-Carney has more.
The Badger 2 Medicine is part of U.S. Forest Service land, but is sacred land to the Blackfeet tribes of U.S. and Canada. The Interior said the lease, dating to the Reagan era, was issued with failure to consider the impacts of drilling on the cultural and religious values of the land. Blackfeet Tribal Historic Preservation Officer John Murray.
This is what we expected. You know, we're just going to sit and wait, and we're very confident Sally Jewell's going to do the right thing. We don't know what the judge is going to do, and so we're still sitting at the edge of our seat.
The Interior statement also said the lease was issued without full environmental review, and the Interior Secretary Sally Jewell has the authority to void the lease. The leaseholder has 10 days to respond to the Interior Department's decision, which Interior is still calling preliminary at this point. And for any cancellation to happen, a U.S. District Court judge overseeing the case would have to agree that Interior does have the authority to cancel the lease. I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
The Los Angeles, California American Indian Center is celebrating 36 years of serving Thanksgiving meals. Today, staff and volunteers are providing food for the city's Native American community. In 2014, nearly 400 dinners were served. For more than 40 years, the center has provided a place of shelter and food to Native people living on the streets of Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support provided by Shoshone Bannock Tribal Farms, proud producer of free-range, sustainable buffalo jerky. Holiday delivery of original, peppered, and teriyaki buffalo jerky available on orders placed by December 15th. More information at sbtribalfarms.com.
Support by Indigenous Governance Programs at the University of Arizona, educating practitioners and policymakers to implement nation-building at home and create stronger Native nations. Course offerings at igp.arizona.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And as we approach the Thanksgiving holiday weekend here in Juneau, Alaska, of course, the public market is a huge part of this weekend and has been for, I think, 30-plus years or so now. So I'd like to welcome into the studio Peter Metcalf and a couple of guests, a couple of the vendors for this year's market, Susan Dunsmore and Susan Bennett. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
And Peter, maybe let's just start off. You want to just give a brief thumbnail sketch? It's conceivable there are people in the audience that don't know about the public market, so what is it?
Well, I ran into a box boy the other day who asked that very question, what's the public market? And the cashier was, what? But anyway, it's been we've been doing this since 1983, so that makes this the 33rd annual public market. It's always been in Centennial Hall, always Thanksgiving weekend. And 10 years ago, we expanded to the Jack, so we have another 40 vendors there. And it opens at noon on Friday and continues Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And as many people know, that's kind of a blend of new vendors and longtime vendors. And this year is about the same as it has been for many years. We have about one-third of the vendors are brand new. And Susan Dunsmore is a brand new vendor. And Susan and Walter Bennett are longtime vendors. But we're all sitting here with our natural colored hair. And we're really quite young.
So welcome to the Susans here. So Susan Dunsmore, perhaps, let's start with you.
Okay.
As a new vendor, correct?
Absolutely. This is my first trip to Juneau ever. So.
Well, welcome.
I know, I'm so excited.
And you just got in today? Or?
I got in today. We're really lucky we got in. We've been flying around above Juneau for about 45 minutes trying to decide if we could land or we were going to Sitka, and we came here.
Well, you are lucky you got in.
Yeah.
So glad you got in. So how did you get involved with the public market?
I have a neighbor who's been doing it for a very, very long time. I have a business called Arctic Pups Dog Gear, and I make safety gear and fun gear for dogs. So I've been doing that for about 3 years, and she recommended this one, and I've always wanted to come to Juneau. I've been in Alaska for 15 years, and just wrong to have not been here. So I'm really excited about it.
And have you done other markets like this in Alaska?
Mm-hmm. I do a lot of markets that I've been doing it for about 3 years now. And
is this like a business out of your home kind of a thing?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I just bought built a shop next door to my house, so I can get into my bedroom now. It's really exciting to have that room back because it was a little crowded with me and a Labrador Retriever, and I actually run two businesses. So, and it's my full-time employment, and I love being able to – I love dogs, and I love being able to keep them safe and keep them visible. I brought a couple things down that I've got patents pending on, so if people have a dog person on their list who has everything, I have a couple things they probably haven't seen before because I invented them.
Susan Bennett, welcome back. You've been coming to the market now for how many years?
Well, Peter and I were trying to decide. I think it's around 10, 13 years, but who's counting? And we've been 21 years at the Anchorage Downtown Market and Festival, and we're at the Alaska State Fair. Also, used to do Fairbanks, but had to whittle it down a little bit. But one show we love doing and is such a joy to do is the public market. Not only have the vendors become family, but also the people that work there is an extended family in a lot of ways, bringing us coffee, giving us breaks when we're busy and we need to take a quick run to the facilities or just about any of our needs. And it's just such a pleasure to be in such a positive show with such good energy.
Now, do you both know each other previously, or did you just meet here in the studio?
I actually we've kind of met.
She recognizes my dog.
If she had her dog with her, I would recognize her. And I am also friends with her neighbor, which Eagle River Knife Company, Carol and Janine have been coming here for also. In fact, I think they told us about the show.
Okay.
So they've been here maybe 15-plus years, and they will be here again. And I am very happy to announce that we are just about taking over the third floor of the Driftwood Lodge. They do allow dogs. Our dog is... don't tell anybody in our room right now.
Did you leave the radio on?
I left the cooking channel on because I know there's no scary sounds on that, and she scares easily.
Susan, you should describe what you're selling.
Well, by this time they might know. But my husband and I have a business. We are importers, and we sell moose antler, mammoth ivory carvings, bone carvings. I'm also known as the bead lady, and I sell beads for people to make jewelry, just the beads themselves. And we also have wood carvings and some other beaded baskets and things. So quite a variety.
So back to Susan Dunsmore here. Mm-hmm. As a first-time person, so Susan Bennett, you've been doing this for many years, so I'm sure it all operates like a Swiss watch.
Right? I wish. Just,
okay. But for a first-time vendor, what kind of preparation, I mean, what was involved to even get here, let alone, you know, get set up and be ready for it?
This is the first show that I've flown to. Mm-hmm. I usually have a Subaru completely full of stuff and the dog and dog hair and lights and everything else. And getting everything into three bags that weighed less than 50 pounds was a bit of a challenge. There was a little bit of a crying jag at about 11 o'clock last night as I was tossing collars out. I made an executive decision that I didn't need to bring any camo collars to Juneau, and I don't know if that was a good decision or not, but... they do well in Fairbanks, but it was just the logistics of getting to a place I've never been to, realizing about 6 miles down the road from the airport that I was going the wrong direction and that I needed to turn around. There's all sorts of challenges to being a new vendor.
I have to say that also the challenges remain even after all these years, and while she was crying... probably at the same point, I was in tears and white-knuckling it as we were crossing the Haines Junction into Haines, the pass, with blinding, blowing snow. So we brought our camper, and then we put our camper full of goodies and shipped some things and picked those up and landed here.
Susan Bennett, you referenced kind of some traditions or family, being treated like, feeling like family when you're part of the public market. And I was saying to all three of you before we opened up the mics, just that this is such a huge tradition and there's many layers to the tradition. And earlier you had talked about, it's Thanksgiving and there's a whole, go ahead and talk about what's going to happen Thanksgiving.
My real obsession, as all my friends know, is cooking. And of course, Thanksgiving is my favorite day. So it has, this is probably the eighth year that I have kind of an open door Thanksgiving holiday. Oddly enough, we do seafood. It's always an Alaskan seafood Thanksgiving. And so this year, again, for many years, Marcy Nelson, who has AK Starfish, she'll be joining, and Carol, Eagle River Knives, and Susan that's here, and then Carol's daughter, her husband, and their daughter, Anna. So Carol's granddaughter will all be visiting. And every once in a while, there's a knock on the door. So you just have to bring your own table from your room, your plate, your fork and spoon, and your chair, and you can fit.
Actually, do you know that Deanne's coming? Because she's going to be there.
Yes, okay. And also, yes.
Well, and after this interview, there may be a lot more people coming. So.
I don't bake, so bring a pumpkin pie.
So Peter, we're probably going to get you back on the air a little bit later in the show, maybe to talk to us a little more about the market and the history of it and everything, but anything that you want to add in terms of the two Susans here and on behalf of new vendors coming this year?
Well, you know, we have one vendor coming from Shishmaref, which is on the Chukchi Sea. He's probably the farthest from Alaska. We have vendors from Ohio and California and Washington and Oregon, so it's quite a selection. And a lot of vendors, as Susan Bennett knows, come here to visit family that, you know, they're expatriates either in Anchorage or elsewhere in Alaska, and this is a good excuse to come home and visit their friends and family. So see a lot of that, and it's all in the spirit of the occasion.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Either of you, anything else you'd like to add before we...
Well, I just hope to see everybody there. It's kind of fun. We actually, on the ferry, we kept looking. My husband and I were like, I know him. I recognize him. As we got off the ferry, we realized that it was the husband of a family that has been coming, and the three children we've known for 10 years. So the three-year-old is now 13. So it's been quite a change, but they always make a point to come by and tell us what they've been doing and their history. So there's we almost have this little extended family here in Juneau because of the show, and I think that's really a
reminds
pretty
me,
special.
We have eight vendors coming down from Haines, which is probably the most represented community in the public market.
I filled up that ferry today.
it's kind of like the folk festival for Juneau, and in that regard, it's been going on a long time. It's this event, and so two Susans, thank you both very much for coming to Juneau and participating. Good luck, first time. With being a vendor, and we will see you at the market. And Peter, we'll have you back on a little bit later in the show to talk more about the market.
Thank you, Jamie.
Well, thank you, all three of
Pleasure
you.
Pleasure to be here.
Happy Thanksgiving to each of you.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving, and everybody have a safe and wonderful weekend.
We'll see you at the public market.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 25th of November, 2015. 100 years ago, on this date, Einstein submitted his paper, The Field Equations of Gravitation, for publication, including 10 equations which made up his theory of general relativity, laying out his theory of gravity, where it comes from, and how it interacts with space-time. Einstein's theory viewed space and time not as two separate elements but interwoven, such that a change in one produces an effect on the other. If an object is moving at a very high rate of speed, time actually slows down. It's the birthday of Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli on this day in 1881, the fourth of 14 children born to sharecroppers in Lombardy. He served as a sergeant in the Royal Italian Army during World War I. He was a chaplain and stretcher bearer, took holy orders, and eventually became the Pope, John the 23rd, famous as one of the most compassionate popes. Pope John the 23rd said, "We were all made in God's image, and thus we are all godly alike." He made pastoral visits in the diocese of Rome, visited children afflicted with polio, visited a prison. He told the inmates, "You could not come to me, so I came to you." And he was the orchestrator of the Second Vatican Council in 1962, which made major changes in the Church, changes in the Mass, which had been said in Latin with the priest facing away from the congregation, and now was said in the native language with the priest facing the congregation and speaking to them. It's the birthday of Andrew Carnegie, born in Dunfermline, Scotland, 1835. Came to this country as a teenager, took a job in a factory in Pittsburgh, tried to educate himself by going to public libraries. and with the help of the library, got himself a job as a telegrapher for the Pennsylvania Railroad. Worked his way up to vice president, went on to start his own steel company, and became one of the richest men in the world, whereupon he spent the rest of his life giving that money away and building almost 3,000 libraries across the country. And it's the birthday of the man who said, "People often tell me I could be a great man. I'd rather be a good man." John F. Kennedy, Jr., born Washington, 1960, 2 weeks after his father was elected President of the United States. Here's a poem for today by Donald Hall, entitled On Reaching the Age of 200. When I awoke on the morning of my 200th birthday, I expected to be consulted by supplicants like the Sibyl at Kumar. I could tell them something. Instead, it was the usual thing, dried grapefruit for breakfast, Mozart all morning, interrupted by bees, wings, and making love with a woman 181 years old. At my birthday party, I blew out 200 candles, one at a time, taking naps after each 25. Then I went to bed at 5:30 on the day of my 200th birthday, and slept and dreamed of a house no bigger than a flea's house, with 200 rooms in it, and in each of the rooms a bed, and in each of the 200 beds, me sleeping. A poem by Donald Hall, On Reaching the Age of 200, from the Selected Poems of Donald Hall, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Staples, with technology products, copy and print, shipping and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And I'd like to welcome back into the studio Peter Metcalf.
Thank you, Jamie.
The creator of the public market. And the public market, of course, is starting once again on Friday, right? It opens at noon.
On Friday, yes.
Yeah, runs through the weekend, Centennial Hall and at the Jack. Peter, 3 years ago?
Well, it's 32 years ago, making this the 33rd annual event.
So tell us about the original idea.
Well, I've been involved in some music production, some concerts here in Juneau, and the brand new building was coming online, the Centennial Hall. And there was the rate system for musical events was discouraging, actually, at that time. And I'd just been in Seattle and made my usual trek to the Pike Place or Public Market, downtown Seattle, and that's basically the genesis of the idea. And we gritted out the Sheffield Ballroom and found we could get some 90 spaces in there. And then we built the panels and issued an invitation, and we got basically an overwhelming response. We had a wait list the first year and filled out every space. And then we organized it in summer. It was in July of 1983, maybe the second or third event in the Centennial Hall. And it just happened to be a weekend while we picked it, because there were five tour ships that were anchoring in Gaston Channel on a Saturday. And they didn't have a heck of a lot to do in 1983. There wasn't nearly the amount of shore excursions there are now. And so we got the word out to the tourists. And the lobby was so full, we could barely open the doors. So we knew out of the gate we were on to something. And then continued doing these events actually three times a year for the first couple years. And as you may know, I'm a publisher, and I have plenty of work in that regard. And so it was getting to be too much, and we could see a declining a number of people coming in, and we decided, let's just do this on Thanksgiving weekend, which we've done ever since. And the event continued to grow and mature. It's one of these, what you describe as an organic event, because every year people come and test out their products, and some, they have great success and they keep coming back. Others, the product doesn't sell as much as they wanted, and so they fade away or come up with a better idea and come back. And so over time, the products that the vendors have to offer are ones that people very much are looking for holiday gifts and that sort of thing. As you saw with our guest just a little earlier, I mean, that the one woman, Susan Dunsmore, I just met 10 minutes before we came over here, and she has all these pet gifts, dog gifts, which are, just a really unique Alaskan made, and which meets our motto, which is only at the public market. You're only going to get Susan Dunmore patent pending dog, collars and whatever else she has. So
you've made a real effort over the years to kind of carefully grow it, I think. I mean, you've been careful not to overshoot, but allowing it to still grow. But you've also really tried to make sure there's a turnover and a refreshing of vendors. And you just mentioned the motto. So how, in the selection process, how does that work? How do you kind of figure out this year's lineup, if you will?
Well, if I was judging basically on the products I wanted, it'd be a guy show. some of the stuff, frankly, surprises me that it sells, but people want it, and that's great. So I there's little judgment on my part as far as the products. But if they're from, if they have a product that's not commonly available, I favor them, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And one thing I really don't like to do is, A, judge a product, and B, be judgmental with vendors. But we were getting criticized for allowing in too many people who are at just art shows and retail shops here in town when we're charging, which we do at the Centennial Hall. We don't at the Jack. So the solution was, if the product isn't, unique, then no questions asked, you can be in the Jack. And the Jack is actually, in some respects, a better venue as far as the, airiness and the openness of the layout, and really bright. And I like the Jack a lot, but, sometimes vendors are always wanting to get into the public market, which is much more crowded, but they feel it's better for them. So there's this whole thing happens. But, if you have a Mary Kay product line, we're not going to judge on that, but we're going to allow one Mary Kay product line and they can show at the Jack. But as it turns out, because a lot of people are late, we get very unique products and they end up in the Jack, which is great because they basically have more face time with vendors in the Jack. We did a study a few years ago and they get proportionately many more people walking in because there's only 40 vendors, but and they get 80% of the number of people who come into the Centennial Hall. And because we don't charge admission at the Jack, if somebody doesn't want to pay $7 for the weekend to go to Centennial Hall, hey, go to the Jack. And that's where we have all the prize drawings, too. And we have a lot of prize drawings, but we limit it, all the drawings to the Jack to draw people to go there and put in their, prize drawing certificate. So it's worked out really well, and people, vendors, this is really important to me, they're happy with the venue. They come away, most of them make more money than they expect to, and that's the key to having a happy vendor.
So, 3 decades running here, it's easy to, maybe for an outside person to say, oh, it must run really smoothly. It must be a turnkey operation. And I'm guessing it's nothing close to that. I mean, despite all the efficiencies and the systems that you've figured out, I imagine every year presents challenges and question marks.
Most people know contractors and people who build houses and they got it down to a science, but they still have to build the damn thing.
So there you go.
There is work involved, but fortunately, I have a big family, as many people know, and I have a lot of nieces and nephews, and And my nephew, Luke, has become kind of in charge of operations over the weekend. And so I can be over here talking to you, and Luke is taking care of things over at Centennial Hall. And my nieces, Nellie and Lynn Metcalf, are very involved in the operations as well, and the, you know, accounting, and then dealing with the young workers and that sort of thing. So, and then my nephew, Ben, came up from school in Seattle, and my little niece Maggie just arrived, I was told, a few hours ago, and she's very big on helping Santa. She's about 7 years old. So,
well, you have the wonderful tradition too of hiring local Juneau kids, and many of them returned and worked for you for many, many years. And,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's really, it's been really a fun part of this, is just watching kids mature and get, you know, make the connection between a paycheck and work. And in this case, it's pretty fun work for them. It's so social. But they also, I've had adults come back to me and say their first job was at the public market, and that's the first time they'd ever been given any responsibility. So
yeah,
it's been very fun that way.
So we got just a few seconds left here. Anything in particular that you just want to mention or highlight here about this year's public market before we switch gears?
Well, we always have a turnover, which is part of what we were talking about leading up to this. Is you know, we're soliciting new vendors, unique products, and so we have something like 43 brand new, never been at the public market vendors. And if you were here in 2014, went to the market, there'd be almost 60 new vendors, because a number of our vendors, you know, rotate through every other year or so. So it's and then we got a really good food court this year. Proud of that. That's something else that we've had to kind of mature, because early on it was a little bit on the amateurish side, and force of regulations and so on has made it so it has to be professional, and it is, and we got a good selection this year.
Well, Peter, thank you on behalf of Juneau and everybody who's benefited and had fun and shopped and what have you at the public market, and just for the community at large. It's a big event. A lot of people come to town. It's good for the overall economy. There's a lot of other benefits here to the market taking place. So good luck, and thanks
thank
for
you.
Pulling it together again.
Well, thank you, Jamie.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio good folks from Eagle Crest. Matt Lillard and Charlie Harrington have just walked through the door. In fact, Matt's still got his snow cap on and his down jacket coming in out from wintry Juneau.
Yeah, it's amazing up there. We've been spending all day getting the word out that we're going to be opening this weekend. And we're up at Eagle Crest. We are above the clouds all day. It was a beautiful sunny day, so it's been amazing.
Now, hold on. I want you to say that again because that's a pretty big headline.
I know.
Say it again.
We are opening the Hooter and Black Bear chairlifts for skiing and riding this coming Saturday at 9 a.m. with mainly skiing off of the Black Bear chairlift on the upper mountain.
Now, this is big news. This is a week earlier than you were thinking.
That's correct. The scheduled opening day was Saturday, December 5th. But quite frankly, we've got the snow right now. We're really eager to get up and ski, especially after last season. And we really just want to get out there and get on it. So we figured let's give it a go.
Excellent. Are you getting people calling you and are?
Yeah, I mean we've been kind of talking to some people here and there on the mountain about the possibility of it happening, but we just announced it about 2 hours ago. So yeah, lots of people calling. Lots of people are really excited about it. And we're also going to have a season pass sale that starts on Friday, and goes through December 6th. So people can, if they've not bought a season pass yet, they can buy one at a discounted rate of $519 for adults, which is a great deal. And they can start, working towards paying that off this coming Saturday. And not to mention our huge event on Saturday night, the Downtown Rail Jam.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. I want to stay up on the mountain for the moment here. So conditions, what can people expect on the slopes?
Yeah, it's still early season. So, as we said in the press release, that the terrain is for intermediate and expert skiers only for opening weekend. So it's going to be skiing off of the Black Bear chairlift. So they'll ride the Hooter chairlift up and then use our new road and trail that we built this summer to get over to Black Bear. And then from there, they'll be able to lap the Black Bear chairlift. Exactly what terrain will be open is not fully decided yet, but as of right now, it's looking like the whole east side as well as east chutes. We don't know if we'll be getting over to the west side or yet. We're going to make that determination on Friday. So there's still more information to come. But, we've got 51 inches of snow at the summit, 20 at the base. Right now, it's really good snow. It's a lot of fun to ski. It's got a nice supportable base with some powder on top, and if things hold out, it's going to be a lot of fun to ski and ride.
Now, did you produce a lot of snow, and you've had the snow on top of it, or did you just flat out get enough snow this time around?
I mean, what we're going to be skiing on up on Black Bear is all natural snow for this weekend.
Good.
Yeah, we have made some at the bottom of the Hooter and Ptarmigan chairlifts, as well as in the beginner area. But honestly, the temperatures weren't as cold as we wanted to this week, so it wasn't as productive as we would have liked it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But we're happy to be able to open on natural snow all the same and get up there skiing and riding. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're really excited. I will say, from a services standpoint, we're really just focusing on the skiing and riding this weekend. So the snow bus will not be running. There will be no rentals. There's no snow sports school lessons. There's no food and beverage, with the exception of the mountain lift. We'll have the coffee stand open with some snacks, but brown bag your lunch for this weekend only. So it's, like I said, we're focusing on, we have snow. We want to get up on that mountain.
Let's grab some skiing.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get after it. So,
but then the following week will kind of be the full opening of everything.
Exactly. We'll close down after Sunday for the week, mm-hmm. and then the plan is to reopen on Saturday, December 5th, with our normal operating schedule, with everything else operating at that point in time. So it's exciting news. It's been a couple of years since we were able to open early. We're happy that the snow is here. We're off to a far better start than we have been, and let's get going.
And the forecast still looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, the forecasts are forecasts. It's 4 days out. So there's a potential for a system coming in.
I shouldn't even brought up forecasts.
We always, I know. We need to talk about it, but you never know till you go.
You never know. That's right.
And we are going to, ski it when we can ski it. And as of right now, that's this weekend. So let's let it happen and have some fun.
So the downtown event.
Yeah, so Saturday after you get done off the mountain, be sure to come by Marine Park. It starts at 4:30 and will go until about 8. And we're essentially bringing snow from the mountain and setting up a terrain park in Marine Park.
Okay, so for somebody who doesn't know what a terrain park is, real quickly, what are you going to be setting up in Marine Park?
Well, hopefully a lot of people have an idea of what a skate park is. It's very similar to that, except snow-oriented for skis and snowboarders. So there will be a platform with a ramp going down it for the skiers and snowboarders to go off and get speed, and then a small jump going onto a box that the skiers and snowboarders can slide down and do some tricks, and a nice landing zone, which will be announced by an MC. There will be a live DJ there that will have some fog machines and a light show, as well as a food and beverage tent and some food vendors and lots more from local retailers that have come out for the event.
Now, have you done this before? Is this first time?
This is the first urban terrain park in downtown Juneau.
Yeah.
For us, maiden voyage. I like it.
For us, have been around for a while. We used to get in lots of trouble for doing this. You know, trying to slide
now we have
rails.
Permits.
Because
you know, sliding rails, whether you're on a skate deck or a snowboard or skis, it's you know, it was one of those kind of rebel things for a long time. And then ski areas, you know, we've all picked up on doing it and creating these things up on the mountain. But we decided, you know, we thought what would be a cool event to do and show Juneau and the non-skiing public kind of what goes on up there, you know, to bring this down into Marine Park and get the downtown businesses involved and, you know, kind of highlight what's going on up there. So, yeah, it's the first time we've done this in Juneau downtown. We're really excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And check it out.
So do you have skiers, snowboarders? We're talking snowboarders, right?
Skiers and snowboarders.
And are these people who are kind of picked in advance?
No, it's open to the public. So registration is at 4 o'clock. So anyone with skiing and snowboarding, you know, familiarity with terrain parks is welcome to come down and register and try it. It's free. Free and open to the public.
So again, just the nuts and bolts. This is what's the event called? This is Saturday.
It's called Eagle Crest Downtown Rail Jam, Saturday at 4:30 p.m., you can register early if you want to come early. Otherwise, you can register any time throughout the night. And sort of just an open session. Everyone can line up and take turns. And there will be like a small little competition with some prizes donated from local retailers. And bragging rights, of course.
Most importantly. So very nice. It's part of Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
You got the public market happening. You guys are going to be bringing this event downtown. You've actually got the slopes are going to be opening up.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a preseason event, but now it's turning into an opera-ski sort of event. So that's kind of a nice surprise.
Very cool. So, I realize it's hard to imagine people don't know what Eagle Crest is and the skiing opportunity, but I'm just thinking for people who, you know, here we are at the beginning of a season, and for somebody who either themselves as an adult who's never skied before, really tried, or has kids, words of encouragement for somebody maybe to really think about Eagle Crest this year as part of their winter recreation.
Certainly. You know, winters in Juneau can be long. They can be dark. They can look a lot like they can today, especially if you're at sea level. But, you know, if you want to get outside and recreate and do it affordably, you know, Eagle Crest is a fantastic, you know, place to be. Our mission is to be affordable winter recreation for the community of Juneau. You know, we can get up above the clouds into the sunshine and the soft snow. There's a lot of technological advances and the way we teach skiing and snowboarding now, it's different than it was 10, 15 years ago. And we've got a lot of great programs for people new to the sport or returning to the sport to get up there and give it a shot, as well as rental gear and all the services you need. So it's a really great facility. We've got a great staff that can, you know, bring you up to speed if it's been a while, or completely teach you from scratch. Whether it's a 3-day triple play package that is 3 days of lift lessons and rentals for $119, or anything in between, it's just a great facility, and we're proud to offer it to the Juneau community.
Absolutely, and you can even find out more about all our Learn to Ski and Snowboard programs at the Rail Jam on Saturday. Because specifically in December and January, we have some discounts on our Learn to Ski and Snowboard packages.
And Nordic, you also offer Nordic skiing up there. Is that happening yet? Is the lower loop too not enough snow yet? Where are you at on Nordic?
Yeah, so we've packed down a lower loop, but it's still thin in spots. You know, it's not open by Eagle Crest standards, but if people wanted to go up there and do some adventure Nordic skiing, certainly it's a good way to get up. We have also created a very small mini upper loop near the bottom of the Black Bear chairlift, and we're still not calling it quote unquote open because we're not setting classic track yet. But it is groomed and rolled out, and you know, people are encouraged to go up and give it a shot and check it out. So, but that being said, we've got classic rental gear in the Nordic category. We also give some great Nordic lessons. So if you're interested in doing that, you know, check that out as well. So yeah, it's both Alpine and Nordic up at Eagle Crest.
And I love the reference to being above the clouds, because it's so true. There are so many times when you finally get up to Eagle Crest, you go, oh, it's clear.
Yeah, it's amazing. Or it's raining down here, it's snowing up there.
Right.
You know, it's just a really good escape, and it's only, you know, 12 miles from where we sit.
Yeah, we're really lucky to have that asset here in the community. So with just a minute to go, anything else that you really wanted to mention today on the radio, Charlie?
Yeah, so with the Rail Jam on Saturday, just worth noting that in the event of really inclement weather, wind, or even rain at sea level, we are open to postponing it just to make sure everyone has a much better time spectating and participating in the event. So stay tuned at skijuno.com for any updates on that and on our social media as well.
Yeah, and I'll also close by saying, you know, from our exactly what's going to be operating, you know, terrain-wise and other things for the weekend, I'll be putting out what's called The Word on the Mountain, which is kind of a GM's blog on Friday, and we'll talk more about that. So, you know, as Charlie just said, skijuno.com and Facebook are a great way to get information as up-to-date as possible. We look forward to seeing you this weekend. If you don't have a pass, look forward to the pass sale, and we'll have some fun skiing at the Downtown Rail Jam.
Eagle Crest opening up a week early this weekend. The very exciting news, Matt and Charlie. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Happy Thanksgiving.
And good luck with the rail event, too.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Thank you.
You should come down.
I'm going to, Matt.
This is Bird Note. Back in grade school, we all likely had a teacher with an uncanny ability, even with her back turned, to sense when we were up to no good. You might say she had eyes in the back of her head. In nature, there are a few birds that actually appear to have eyes in the back of their heads. Birds like the northern pygmy owl have large, black, eye-shaped markings on the feathered back of their brown heads, a plumage adaptation that creates a pair of false eyes. But why? One theory is that large false eyes may deter predators. They create the illusion that the pygmy owl is much bigger than its 6 3/4 inch size. A more current theory is that the false eyes help protect the pygmy owl's true eyes. The little owl, which is active during daylight, is often subject to aggressive mobbing. Small birds will surround, scold, and even strike the pygmy owl, with some attacks directed at its eyes. If the large false eyes can take the brunt of these attacks, little harm will come to the owl's vulnerable true eyes. There's always more to the story at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/pool. More information at 586-5325.
And I'm happy to welcome into the studio two representatives from Catholic Community Service here in Juneau. We have Aaron Walker Tolis, the executive director, and Joni?
It was
Joni Pico. And I'm not sure what your role is. Are you a volunteer? Are you part of staff? Or
bereavement and volunteer coordinator for Hospice and Home Care of Juneau.
Very good. And they're here, I think, primarily to talk about the Light Up a Life celebration and event here in the capital city. And there may be time to talk about other aspects of hospice and what have you, but let's start off with you, Erin.
Well, thank you for having us. We really wanted to talk about Catholic Community Service and also about Hospice and Home Care of Juneau. It is that time of year again, and we wanted to sort of reach out and remind people of the services we offer and who we are and the opportunities that they have to be charitable and give during the holiday season. We want to remind people that we do a lot of things, and I'm going to let Joni talk about hospice and home care. But we are also Southeast Senior Services. We have senior centers in Angoon, Haines, Clickwan, Hoonah, Juneau, Cake, Ketchikan, Saxman, Klawak, Craig, Sitka, Skagway, Wrangell, and Yakutat. So we're serving over 2,000 seniors every year with congregate meals, hot meals, and meals delivered to their homes. We run the caravan program here in Juneau. We run the Bridge Adult Daycare Center for folks experiencing memory care and needing help during the day. And we provide care coordination and paratransit in a lot of communities. So we have a lot going on. We also have a behavioral health program for children and families, kids experiencing behavior challenges in school or with their families or have experienced some trauma. We're there for them as well. So we do a wide range of services in a lot of communities across the region. And pretty soon we'll be sending out opportunities to donate. You can always donate on our website, ccsjuno.org, and let people know that thanks to the Benito and Francis Gagin Foundation, they have offered to do a very generous $75,000 match during this holiday season and going into the spring as well. So for every dollar that someone donates to Catholic Community Service, that'll be matched by $1 from the foundation, making money go twice as far. We're really thankful to that for that gift and that we can serve so many people in the community.
Is this I don't know anything about your budget or how you put your money together to operate. You provide incredible services. I want to talk about that in a second. Is this a major fundraiser? Is this the major fundraiser?
Yeah, it's our biggest of the year. Yeah. Our biggest. It's all about the holidays and holiday giving. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we accept donations year round, of course, but most of the donations that come in do come in during the holidays.
You mentioned a lot of communities, and that made me think there must be a lot of people on the ground in all of those communities making all of these services happen and
Absolutely.
Coordinated out of Juno, I'm assuming. But how big is this workforce, and is it all volunteer? And
well, we have a lot of volunteers. Last year, we had over 10,000 hours of volunteer time given through our agency, but we have about 170 staff. Spread out across Southeast Alaska.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, yeah. We have a lot of volunteers doing everything from sitting with individuals in hospice to Meals on Wheels, driving around Juneau, delivering lunch to folks who are homebound.
So all incredibly important services and hospice. I can't imagine a more meaningful and important service to be offering. So Joni, you're here to talk more about that.
More in particular about the Light Up a Life mm-hmm. fundraising campaign, mm-hmm. which is so much more than a fundraising campaign. This time of year is a challenging time of year for people who have experienced a loss or have an illness in the family or who are experiencing the anniversary of a loss. And we have an enormous mailing that goes out throughout Southeast Alaska and to some other cities in the United States. But importantly, in a communal sense, we have a Christmas tree, and traditionally it has been at the Nugget Mall, but this year we moved it over to the Jack, and we have our Christmas tree is going to be in the gallery at the Jack all during public market, and people are free to stop by and take a look at the tree and create ornaments and put them on the tree if they like in memory of loved ones who they've lost. We will move the tree out into the entryway of the Jack for the rest of the holiday season after the public market ends, and so people can come by any time that they would like. I have helped organize the mailing, and we have a beautiful card that we send out, and on the back of it there's a quote by Helen Keller that I just really want to read on the air that touches just the soul of why hospice is. It's a one-sentence quote. And it says, "What we have once enjoyed and deeply loved, we can never lose, for all that we love deeply becomes a part of us." And
it kind of says it all.
It's very special.
So how many years, this event, this is how many years has this been happening in Juneau? And then is this part of a national program as well, this?
I've lost track of the number of years that it's been going on in Juneau, and so I was curious about, you know, the depth of the program, mm-hmm. and so I Googled Light Up a Life, and it, you know, just to be really sure, and it is something that is occurring in many communities across the country, and a lot of hospice programs are volunteer run in smaller communities, and you know they need to raise money in order to keep things going, and some are huge and massive and they have large galas at this time of year. But like I said when I first started talking, it is for fundraising, but it is a time for people to come together and share their experiences over the holidays and support each other when there's been a loss.
Holidays obviously can be a very difficult time mm-hmm. for families and friends thinking mm-hmm. about lost loved ones.
And we should probably also mention that hospice is offered to anybody in Juneau, regardless of their ability to pay. And so that's part of why our fundraiser is also important to us, is because we accept everybody. Everybody referred by their physician can receive hospice services. So,
and maybe just, you know, it's easy to think everybody knows what hospice is or what hospice services are, but maybe expound on it a little bit.
Sure.
And what are we talking about?
Sure. Well, we're talking about skilled nurses coming in and helping a family to help their loved one be at home during the last months of their life. So end-of-life care, so that they can be at home and they can be as pain-free as they can be and be comforted by their family and friends. And so we have a team. We have nurses that are paid nurses. We have volunteers who will come and sit and give family maybe a little bit of a break or set up the giant hospital beds that we also provide. And believe that's quite an important thing when you're going to provide hospice at home for a loved one. And then, of course, we have a chaplain. And so we have a wide variety of services. Whatever the family needs, but we're not 24-hour care. We're there to support the family and surround the family as they care for their loved one.
Additionally, after there is the passing away of a family member, hospice and home care wants to be able to provide support services to people who are bereaved. And so we follow people if for 13 months, officially and formally, after the death of a loved one. And we have phone calls, and there are some counseling services and mailings that go out at different times during the course of those 13 months to help people know that they're just not all alone out there.
The Light Up a Life event and tradition here, if you will, what do you think, what is it about that that works? I mean, because the grieving is such a personal and private thing, yet here's something where people are coming out to participate in something publicly, and why do you think that works?
My own personal experience is extensive when it comes to having lost family members, but more poignantly, I lost my significant other about 6 years ago, and for the following four holiday seasons, I was just at such a complete loss as how to memorialize him. And I would stop by the tree, and my young daughter would pick up one of the little decorations and color it, and we would make a contribution in his name. And so the ritual of doing that was healing. Even more so, people would stop by the tree, they would see our ornament, and they would run into us somewhere else in the community, and they would say, "Oh, we see that you remembered your loved one."
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, private. In the ritual of putting an ornament on was private, but then the community saw, and people would reach out to us, and it was very, very helpful.
Yeah, the struggle of figuring out how to honor the lost loved one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you both. We got just maybe a minute here. Anything else that you really wanted to mention today, either about services provided and or the event itself?
Well, I guess one thing I should mention about the services we provide across Southeast Alaska is that if someone does want to donate, you know, please do come do Light Up a Life. Mm-hmm. It means so much. But if you want to donate just to the organization, we do and can keep your donation in the community and for the purpose which you want. You can donate online at ccsjuno.org, even though, yes, we serve all of Southeast. But when you donate, you can make a mention. There's a place to write. You can tell us what program you want to support. If you want to donate for Ketchikan and have it stay there, we can have it stay there. So whatever program you want to support, you can choose that, and we'll keep it just for that.
Well, very good. Joni, real quickly.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Joni and Aaron both, thank you very much for everything that you do in this realm. It's very important work, and it means a lot to people. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in